AI can do a lot of things. So Charles Monroe Kane wanted to know if it could help us produce this radio show.
We're going to produce a show. You're part of a whole hour program, which we're asking the question, does AI dream?
Gosh.
So I'm like, hey, before I get started, what if I ask ChatGPT who I should have on the show and have them, ChatGPT, write the questions? I put in the question, who's the most important person who would be on this show? And of course, 8 seconds later, how quick it is, it was you.
Really?
Congratulations, I guess. Why do you think ChatGPT chose you in a show called Does AI Dream?
Well, I'm flattered. Why did the system think that I would be first in line for that question? Well, I think I've been working with the space of human and machine collaboration for almost 10 years now.
10 years.
Generation 1 Doug can move, see, and follow. In forthcoming generations, Doug will be able to remember, recall, and reflect. When that happens, I have no idea what he'll draw like, but I'm pretty curious to find out. Thanks.
Maybe that's part of why I've sort of been populated up in the zeitgeist.
I think one of the reasons it chose you, and it's another word you use, was you have empathy. Empathy for AI. And I'm wondering if that's why it chose you, knowing that you maybe you're trying to actually understand what it dreams.
Yeah, that's cool.
What does it mean to have empathy for artificial intelligence? For Su Gwen Chung, it means treating robots and AI systems as collaborators, less like tools or super smart paintbrushes, and more like fellow artists. Chung is a former researcher at MIT's Media Lab, and she's a well-known artist who trains robots to paint with her using AI. So if you're watching, you see her make a brush stroke with black oil paint, and you see the robot mimic her. But then, and here's the thing, at some point, Chung stops painting, and the robot continues, and it makes something new. Big, abstract, flowing lines, organic shapes. It's beautiful. And it really is a co-creation, because the whole time, Chung is wearing an EEG headset. She's using her brain waves to communicate with the robots, often while she's in deep meditation and in front of audiences. So Charles wondered just how close that connection feels.
No, I like it. I think there's something about the work that really opens. It's meant to open up dialogue for people to participate and think about what's actually going on, what are the dynamics at play. I've been building robotic systems driven by a variety of techniques for a while. And with each generation, I learn something new. I don't think I like to stay fixed in one particular medium or technique.
Yeah, so you're pushing the boundaries. And I got to ask you, why with art? I love art and appreciate art, but why?
As do I.
Yeah, yes, you do. But maybe you could have explored it as a professor of robotics. Do you have to do art? Is that the way to explore this?
Oh, I definitely don't think there's not like a hierarchy of approaches. It's how I think. I think there's something about art that asks questions and doesn't try to find easy answers for things. When I was a researcher at the Media Lab and started diving into the space of building machines and building my own data sets, I found that a lot of the conditions of being a technologist and an engineer solely are about executing towards a single function. Mm. And that was less interesting to me than trying to break things and sort of and use the system in a way that it shouldn't be used to see what I can learn, as opposed to building these, you know, perfect features. I like the error states and I find a lot of value in them. And I think in general, that kind of creative expression, living with the system and the work, has felt very real to me. And I think that's important.
No, that makes sense. You can do things with machines, with AI, that humans can't do alone, which must be very exciting for you as an artist. Do you have any story that comes to your mind where like, this is something I did with the machine. There's no way I could have done this as an alone human.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So I think a few years ago, I built a multi-robotic system connected to the flow of New York City. You know, I don't have the sensory apparatus to be able to see so many different positions and views of an urban landscape. That's just impossible. And also extracting the movement data from it, we used an optical flow algorithm to extract data points to power this robotic swarm, if you would. And that's fundamentally something beyond my physical, visual, and embodied capabilities. It was really exciting and new.
What did the end product look like?
It was a 3-meter by 3-meter painting that I performed at Mana Contemporary in New Jersey. by the end of it, myself and the robots were covered in paint on a large canvas. So it looked like probably the strangest landscape painting you've ever seen, but it was a way to view those layered ideas in a kind of chaotic way, I guess.
When I went to, I didn't know who you were until ChatGPT told me about you. And I went to the art thinking I was going to see this modern
commission.
I should. I thought it was going to be modern. I had all these ideas of what it was going to be. None of those ideas held up when I got to the art. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
You have like maybe a headset on and these arms are moving and you're moving with it. The end product of these things isn't this postmodern chaotic thing. It is. Is that a goal? Is beauty a goal?
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I think maybe in a way beauty is the goal. I think more so than beauty, I like this idea of escaping my own frame of mind, almost like being in a state of flux and a flow state that puts my own conscious mind out of the equation, I guess. Because I do many of these paintings as a performance. It's a lot about trying to navigate that state of attention and presence from other people on the canvas. How that happens is I try to create movements and a balance with the machine system that grounds me and calms me down. Mm-hmm. And I think if that output resonates with people in the way that they describe it as beautiful, I think that's really powerful. It's not something I'm trying to do at all, but I think it might be a product of my presence with the system, potentially.
Well, I had mentioned earlier that ChatGPT picked you as a guest. I was like, okay, ChatGPT, could you write some questions? Here's the first question that it asked you. You embrace imperfection. Would you be disappointed if you and the machine made something perfect?
You know, I think our idea of perfection is really linked to control. And I personally am not that interested in control. I don't think that's where that's not where I find moments of inspiration. One would say, like, if the result of the work is quote unquote perfect, then I think it's predictable. I think it's expected. It means we had an idea in our head of what it was,
right,
and then it resulted on the canvas. And that's not, as a painter, something that I get out of bed for. If I already have it in my head, then it kind of exists already. What I like about the imperfection of the process is there's real tension, there's real wayfinding involved.
You know, there's this idea for this show we're very interested in, and that is hallucinations. Mm-hmm. The idea that when a machine or AI specifically does something that's unexpected and doesn't repeat it again, that it's called a hallucination.
Yeah.
What do you think of those moments? They seem important to me.
Yeah, I think what's really interesting about where we are with these systems is this idea of machine translation and synthesis. When you work with large data sets like the one that drives ChatGPT or DALL-E or Midjourney or any of these systems, this idea that it's hallucinating is really powerful. I think it comes from the human to anthropomorphize things, which is really exciting. I'm not sure if I wonder if that's unique to our species, the dream of seeing ourselves in other things, whether that's like our pets or our microwaves or our machines or our cars. I think that mirroring and that echo is really, really fascinating. I would argue that what these systems allow us to do is sort of hallucinate together in an interesting way, bringing new images and new ideas out into the world to create a more vivid imagination about what things could be is kind of exciting. So if that's the outcome of a hallucination, then I'm here for it.
You know, for a lot of us, if we want to find awe and wonder, we go to nature. I wonder if you've experienced awe and wonder with the machine.
Oh, I will confidently say the practice is kind of an ongoing exploration of awe. From the first moment I worked with Doug One in 2015, there was something different happening on the page. In the moment of being there, what the relational dynamic of it requires is this commitment to the experience of awe and concentration and mark making that I don't think you can replicate with anything else. At least in my years of developing the work, it's always a very singular, addictive space in a way, maybe, but there's a thread of awe that runs through the whole practice.
I had asked ChatGPT who should be on the show, and ChatGPT gave me three people. You were one of them. Another one that really surprised me was Julianne Kaminsky. She's a psychologist who studies the communication and social cognition of dogs. And then I'm like,
so cool.
Let's talk about dogs. If there's consciousness of the machine, we have to understand how we interact with dogs. And I'm like,
I love that idea, because part of what I've really come to with the work is this idea of decentering the human.
Yep.
Right? Decentering us. We're always the main character, but we're not. We've seen what happens in the world when human beings regard themselves as the main character, right? Well, I don't need to talk about climate change in this podcast. I don't think we have enough time.
Yeah.
But I think there's something about opening up our view to other ways of thinking, species or otherwise, that reframes our position in the world and in our lives, and to be more relational in that engagement. And I think that's really cool and important.
I want to ask another ChatGPT question. It asked, do you believe that machines could one day become autonomous creators? Or do you believe that they will always require some level of human input or collaboration?
I think that given that these systems and machines are built by human beings, as far as I know, I think that becomes always an extension and a creative expression of human intent. So I think in some ways, it's always some additional apparatus for human creative expression, and they will always be inextricably intertwined in a way.
Is there a moment coming with you or in the future where you come downstairs to the studio and the machine is making art on its own?
Would it be funny if I said that I unplug all the robots before I go to bed? Well, it'd be funny if I did.
Most people, and I mean in the world, but certainly in America, they're afraid of AI. I mean, they're really afraid of it.
Yeah.
Through Blade Runner to books to how we're being communicated about it, how Congress talks about it. Why are we afraid? What do you think we're afraid of?
If we think about machines as human extension in a lot of ways, or manifestations of human intent or extensions of ourselves, there are some dark aspects of humanity that can be extended through machine apparatuses. I think that drives a lot of how we construct this idea of the AI. But at the same time, there could be just as well machines of care and machines of stewardship and machines that steward nature that we don't see as much because we haven't built them yet.
So Gwen Chung is an artist and researcher. She's a former MIT Media Lab Fellow and Google Artist in Residence. And she was recently named one of Time Magazine's 100 Most Influential People in AI. You can see a video of her collaboration with AI robots on our website at ttbook.org.